Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Hello and welcome.
We are live. We're doing this a kind of a different way today, and I was thrown off there. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just going by, okay, there's the end of the music there. But welcome, everyone, welcome. I'm obviously not in the studio today. I live down at sea level, and getting up that big old hill this morning was more than I could manage, and SR16 was a parking lot. So I hope you are all safe and somewhere warm. I don't know what it's like up in Seattle, but I thank Eric for getting into the studio this morning so we could at least bring you a live show today. Eric, I appreciate that. And have two great guests for you. We actually have a little change in programming. I was going to talk in the second half hour of today's show with Britta Belli, who's the editor of E! The Environmental Magazine, about green gift holiday ideas, but unfortunately she has sickness in the family. And so we flip-flopped next week's show. We'll be talking in the second half of the show with Dr. Mary Lamier about Understanding Myself, A Kid's Guide to Emotions and Strong Feelings. She's written a really great book for kids, and we'll be talking about that later on, about how they can identify their feelings and learn to express themselves without throwing tantrums, which of course we'd all like during the holidays. First, I'm very pleased to welcome producer and writer Marilyn Mellows. She is the series producer of God in America. This is the most fascinating documentary series that I've seen in quite a while. Marilyn is a producer and writer at WGBH. She's known for the popular four-hour series From Jesus to Christ, The First Christians. She developed the ongoing history series American Experience and served as its first series editor. And additional credits include the award-winning programs Nixon, The Kennedys, Castro's Challenge, Vietnam, A Television History, and Julia, America's Favorite Chef. Quite some diversity there. She developed the series God in America and has served as its series producer throughout. Marilyn Mellows, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Vicki. I'm delighted to be here.
And I'm really pleased to talk with you because I said this is really a fascinating series. I have not yet seen all of it. It's a six-hour series, as I understand, but I've seen about a third of it, and it is just engrossing. So why don't you, in your own words, just tell us a little bit about this series and how it began for you?
Okay, I'm happy to do that. I want to say, first off, though, to you and all your listeners out there, everybody can see all 6 hours of God in America on our website. All 6 hours are up there. It's www.pbs.org/God in America. There's a ton of stuff. The programs themselves are the heart and soul of the series, but there's lots and lots of additional material, behind-the-scenes interviews with the directors and producers, God in the White House, the Black Church, People and Ideas, all kinds of things. Oh, and a religious literacy quiz, if you would like to take the quiz.
I took it.
I'm sure you scored very high. And also, and really worth knowing about is my Facebook part of this series, which is a wonderful social space where people are welcome and invited to write in and tell us about their own spiritual journeys, their own experience. Everybody out there is welcome to do that. A thousand people have done this, and it's absolutely fascinating reading. A lot of atheists out there have written in. So everybody feel free to check that out. And if you want to participate, please do join us. But let me tell you, Vicki, to respond to your question a little bit about the origins of this program, which people really seem to be very interested in. It goes back a bit in time to the spring, actually, of 2005. We had, by that time, done a number of programs on religion here at WGBH. We had done, as you mentioned, From Jesus to Christ, The First Christians, a wonderful program, one of the best programs ever, I think, maybe made and broadcast here at GBH titled Faith and Doubt at Ground Zero, which is an absolutely remarkable exploration of the spiritual aftershocks of 9/11. Another program on the Millennial Pope, an array of programs, and we wanted to do more. We honestly weren't sure quite what direction to go, so we held this little conference in June of 2005, and we invited 16 quote-unquote outside people. These were thinkers and writers and an ethicist. There was a wonderful, very funny Catholic priest and a rabbi and an imam, actually Imam Rauf, who is heading the effort to build the Islamic Center at Ground Zero in New York. So it's a very interesting collection of people, and plus producers and directors and some executives from PBS. And we had this really amazing, free-flowing, open-ended discussion in which we asked people to respond to two questions. We asked them, what do you think the American public needs to know about religion? And what do you think public television can do in response? So essentially, we gave people a format in which they could say anything they wanted to say, which mostly they did. And I thought it was really interesting what happened. There was a rough consensus came out of this conversation around the fact that America has a real problem with religious literacy, or I should say religious illiteracy. We are an amazingly religious country, and yet many of us really know very little about religion. Many of us really don't know that much about our own denomination or faith tradition, but even less about how religion has played out in our in the history of this country. So we came away from this meeting feeling we really wanted to somehow address that, and I was given the task of trying to figure out what a series on religion in America might look like, and that was a very daunting, I will have to tell you, proposition.
Right.
It seemed very natural, however, to look at the intersection of religion and politics. That has been a tumultuous place.
I think that's what made it so fascinating, too.
These are like two huge forces about which people feel tremendous passion, and you have them colliding. I mean, sometimes you have them moving together, you know, like two huge streams of water moving in the same direction. But often they're really crashing into each other. There's a cross current. There's deep sort of tidal swells, and this seemed to be where the natural center of gravity for this new series settled down. And as I started to look into it, I mean, I will tell you, Vicki, I was just huge. I worked on developing a lot of complicated ideas here, but this was just immense. It was sprawling. It was really hard. There's so much has been written about religion in America. But an interesting thing happened, you know, when I was exploring these ideas and talking to people and reading, doing a lot of reading, there were certain themes that just bubbled up. You know, they just bubbled up, and they sort of insisted upon themselves. One of those themes, and we can talk about this more if you want to, is a religious liberty. Another very important theme was religious diversity in this country, or competition in the religious marketplace. And a third very important theme was religion as a source of social reform.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point.
Yeah,
and one of the things that struck me, Marilyn, was that there really hasn't been that much religious liberty, in that certain forces have tried to really drive what we believe in along the way.
Well, I tell you that the history of liberty in this country is wonderfully complicated. Liberty is a guiding principle and ideal that we take great pride in, and rightly so. But liberty really turns out to be a very messy business. And I think that the series shows very clearly just how complicated liberty is. For example, we tell the amazing story. This was brand new to me, and I think to many people in the audience, of the very unusual political alliance between Thomas Jefferson and the Baptist in
right.
Virginia, and their struggle for religious freedom. We also tell the story of Catholics in New York City who were opposed to the very traditional, very deeply ingrained practice of reading the Bible every day at the beginning of the school day. That is a controversy that happened in the late 1830s and 40s, but it maps very easily on and readily on to the controversy about the Islamic Center near Ground Zero. In both cases, you have a religious minority, Catholics then, Muslims now, really fighting for their religious freedom. And that is a very persistent pattern in our history. Religious dissidents, religious minorities, really pushing the meaning of religious freedom. We really should all be indebted to these people. I mean, the Baptists, mm-hmm. the Seventh-day Adventist, people who come out of Jewish tradition, atheists, they've all pushed. And I think that we're all really in their debt. They have often paid a real price for the stands they took, because I should also mention the Mormons as a religious minority that endured tremendous persecution. These people were often seen as being un-American. Americanness was identified with, in broad strokes, Protestantism. And these people, even though they may have been sects within Protestantism, were seen as being un-American. So they fought hard for their rights. And I think mm-hmm. that their story is really a very important strand in the overarching narrative of religion in this country.
Right. We need to take a quick break right now. But when we come back, I want to talk to you about a couple of things that really surprised me, how democracy and religion are almost described interchangeably in certain areas, and the pro-life versus pro-choice, how Jerry Falwell, for example, did not get involved in that. They saw it as a Catholic issue until they decided they want to go after politicians. So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in the segment is series producer Marilyn Mellows. She has worked on this fabulous documentary, 400 Years of History in 6 hours. It's called God in America and can be seen on PBS and Marilyn's website, as she just said. Yep. And give your website one more time, please.
Okay, it's www.pbs.org/God in America, all one word.
Okay, we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Let's play 10 questions. What is new at KKNW?
Real estate radio.
What's the show about?
Real estate?
Actually, Val, we focus on buying, selling, owning, and financing residential real estate.
That's right, at the ground level, where most of us live.
Who are you guys?
Well, I'm Rob Gray, a broker for John L. Scott in West Seattle.
And I'm Craig Goble with Cascade Pacific Mortgage.
We're both active real estate professionals, and we're in the trenches every day.
Don't miss Real Estate Radio at its new time, 2 o'clock every Thursday here on Alternative Talk 1150. Next week on Conversations Live, Vicky questions dream coach Joyce Chapman about, is it an ending or a new beginning? She's talking about the end of 2010 and the advent of 2011, and shares thoughts on how you can get a jump start on the year ahead. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
There's nothing else like it on the dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Marilyn Mellows. She's the series producer for God in America, and that's been on PBS. It's a PBS Frontline and American Experience Coalition. Is that right, Marilyn?
Co-production, yes. Yes.
Co-production, yeah.
Co-production.
And so this story, this 400 years of history, examines the political and spiritual journeys of religious figures. and basically talks about how our country has been shaped, how our social culture has been shaped. I wanted to talk about something that really surprised me, and that was the pro-choice, pro-life issue. Was always seen as just a Catholic issue until when? Tell us about that.
Well, it's a very interesting story, which of course engages the evangelical movement in this country, which had sequestered itself from politics for many, many years. In the aftermath of the famous Scopes trial in 1925, evangelicals, fundamentalists more prominently, tended to withdraw from political life. They created their own separate institutions, not unlike the Catholics, as a matter of fact, in the 19th century. There's a rough, interesting parallel there. They did not engage in politics. They really shunned political engagement. Politics was considered a dirty business. Besides, Christ is coming, so, you know, to clean up this mess, so why bother to try to make anything right? But something really changes in the 70s. What changes in the 70s is the impact of the 60s. And a culture which is seen by more conservative Christians as being too secular, as being way too secular. And the Supreme Court is targeted as a particularly elite and secular institution, which is regarded even as hostile to religion because of the series of Supreme Court cases, very famous cases that banished, among other things, school prayer in public schools. Now, Jerry Falwell was, at the time, a minister in the Thomas Road Baptist Church. He had started his congregation, and I think it was in an abandoned or former soda pop factory, and he proved to be a very compelling preacher. And a number of operatives, political strategists, I should perhaps say, in the Republican Party recognized his talent for communicating and sought him out. And together they decided to form an organization which they called the Moral Majority. They're very shrewd not to use the word Christian, but to use the word moral majority. And they basically sought to correct what they saw as an excess of kind of secular values in America. And interestingly, one of the issues that galvanized them was abortion. Now, it's hard to imagine this, but there was a time early on, following in the immediate aftermath of the famous Roe decision, when really it was only Catholics who were out there protesting. And then something very interesting happened. There was a maverick theologian by the name of Francis Schaeffer who had established his own place, his own almost like sort of a community in Switzerland, and he became persuaded that abortion was an issue that mattered, and he understood, I think, in a practical way, that it was also an issue around which people could rally. And so abortion emerged as a key rallying point. I want to carefully say not by any means the only rallying point, because we need to remember that another very sensitive issue for many conservative Protestants in the early 70s was the federal government's move to tax Christian academies that were segregated, and this was outrageous. This was mostly in the South, but it was a move by what was perceived to be an overly meddlesome, overly powerful, and aggressive federal government into local institutions. So there are a number of things in play here. As you know the story, the Moral Majority becomes a very powerful force in American politics. It mobilizes, it contributes, although it does not cause, the election of Ronald Reagan. It is decisive in the election of George W. Bush. And one of the things that I found very interesting was the journey that evangelicals took once they embarked in politics. I wondered as I was researching this, you know, what's the trade-off here? I mean, okay, so you get power. You have real power. I mean, your man's in the White House. Your people are in the Senate. Your people are determining domestic policy and foreign policy. But I wonder, does something get lost in the process? And I think that we try to explore that question in hour six, which is titled Of God and Caesar. That's the sixth and final program of the series. And it includes some very interesting reflections by, among other people, a gentleman by the name of Dobson, who actually was Jerry Falwell's associate producer, and he became really, Ed Dobson, I should say, he became really disillusioned with politics and the reasons for his change of heart, I think viewers would find very, very interesting. But it's a conundrum, isn't it? I mean, if you are a person of faith...
Yeah, very much so. Another thing that surprised me, and this is going back even a little bit further, was Billy Graham, evangelist, wasn't happy with the way things were going, and he specifically targeted political leaders because
Billy
they wanted
Graham,
to have more space.
Billy Graham,
I was really surprised with the Kennedy situation that he publicly, you know, said, yes, okay, we support him. But then behind the scenes, he ran a very active campaign to against Kennedy.
He did. We have to understand that Billy Graham, like many, many Protestants in this country, and like many Protestant ministers and leaders, were deeply alarmed at the prospect of a Catholic president. The perception at the time was that the president would be beholden to the Vatican, that the Pope would be basically determining policies from the White House. But we have to remember that anti-Catholicism that came was expressed in the 1960 presidential election has very, very long historical antecedents. I mean, it really does go back to the Reformation, and is traced through the conflicts and wars and religious tension that played out in Europe and caused considerable bloodshed. This is not an American invention, although it certainly took on distinctly of American tone and coloration. But yes, it is fair to say that Billy Graham did not want to see John Kennedy elected president. Once he was, however, Billy Graham moved to become friends with Kennedy. I mean, even before Kennedy was elected, they arranged to play golf together. I think this is someplace down in Florida. And Graham sought out presidents. Now one wonders, you know, what was really going on there. Did he have a fascination with power? Was he trying to bring prominent people into religious fold? I think a lot of things are at work. But Billy Graham was a genuine believer. He was a charming person. And he was somebody who people could talk to and not feel threatened by. He was not a judgmental figure. We also need to remember about Billy Graham that some of the things that he did really infuriated more conservative Protestants. And there are people, I am serious when I say to this day, who think he betrayed their real cause by reaching out to people who were more liberal, even people who were not Christians. I mean, he reached out to Catholics. He reached out to Jews. He reached out to people that did not share his own particular Protestant theology. And so his story is really a very complicated story. There's a wonderful biography of Billy Graham that's being written by a fine scholar at Duke University, Grant Wacker. I'm not sure when it's coming out. I don't think it's come out yet, but Grant has really studied Billy Graham in great detail. He's a fine historian, and so he appears on camera talking about Billy Graham, as you may remember from episode number five, The Soul of a Nation. So Billy Graham, yes, and he is judged to have been heard by more people than any other figure in human history.
But, you know, we're talking about Billy Graham right now, but you talk about all kinds of leaders and the influence that they brought along with them. I was surprised to see that, for example, that Dr. Martin Luther King didn't even want to be a minister.
Well, he came from, I mean, King is a very interesting story. I mean, his father was a minister, his grandfather was a minister. He was deeply interested in theological questions and issues. He certainly thought about academia. I think one of the things that's so interesting about his story, and which I had not known, is the extent to which he was influenced by the thinking and writing of Mahatma Gandhi. He heard a lecture about Mahatma Gandhi when he was still a student, and probably went out and ordered what, 6 books or whatever it was about Gandhi, who himself, interestingly, had been influenced by Thoreau. So you have a very interesting mix of Eastern thinking and Western theology coming together in the figure of Martin Luther King, who was trying to answer the question, how can you fight for social justice without and still adhere to the Christian, central Christian message of love? How can you do this without engaging in violence? And he found in Gandhi's thinking an answer to that question.
Sorry, Marilee, it's difficult when we're both on the phone. We have talk over sometimes. But I was wondering, you know, what surprised you the most with all of this research that you did, intense research? What surprised you the most?
Well, I always say that the role of religious dissidents and religious minorities really did surprise me. That was a piece of our history I had not known. The unlikely political alliance between Baptists and Thomas Jefferson, and also James Madison, of course, was totally new to me. And I dare say I think it's new to many people in our audience who find it a story. It's a story we tell in considerable detail in hour two of this series. But, you know, also the incredible impact that religion has had in our history, the power it's had in our history, how complicated religion is, and also just, you know, sort of what religion is. I mean, we tend to think of religion as being defined by creed or doctrine or ritual, but religion is also so bound up in class. Again, that really comes through in the Virginia story. Bound up in gender, in age, and region. So it's an incredibly complicated phenomenon. And we talk broadly about evangelicals, but we need to remember that the evangelical movement, and certainly today, is far from homogeneous. There are real tensions and strains and factions within the evangelical movement. And of course, we see a younger generation of leaders taking evangelicals into global warming, into AIDS in Africa, into sex trafficking, into an array of issues that they had not previously been engaged in.
Mm. Well,
evangelicals, interestingly, and again, just to return to your question, I was surprised by the extent to which evangelicals have really been at the forefront of social reform. I mean, liberals too, absolutely, but certainly evangelicals and we find that in the wake of the Second Great Awakening, and we tell that story again in the second hour, which is, I think, really an outstanding hour in the series. Very able. Directed by the talented David Belton, who was our series director, and also produced and directed the first 2 hours of God in America.
Mm. Well, I think you did an absolutely outstanding job.
She's amazing.
To me, you know, I come from one of the most non-religious countries in the world. Britain is one of the most non-religious, but I think if you break it down, I think England is even more non-religious, and yet America is one of the most religious. And seeing this film really did explain a lot of the culture and the social side of society. It was really, really interesting and very impactful. What would you like to leave our listeners with, Marilyn?
I would like to leave them with a suggestion once again that everybody out there in Radio Land, please visit our website. All 6 films are on the website. You can view the entire series at your leisure on your laptop. You're welcome to buy the DVD. You can pop it into your flat screen and see it on a really big screen, which is ideally the way to view it. You can order it on shoppbs.org. I think it's $34.99. All yours, but do take the time to explore our website. There's all kinds of great stuff on it. You're welcome to send us your comments. You're welcome to participate in the My Faith book part of the website, and we encourage you to use this as individuals in your churches, synagogues, mosques, communities, however you can find a place for it. We put it out there as an educational resource for everybody, and you're all invited.
There's some terrific collateral to support that, too. You have a, I think it's a 30-something page study guide, for example, which is really useful for discussion groups.
Yes.
It shows. And all of the scholars that you interviewed, their interviews are up on the website, as are the transcripts from the documentary series. Really, it's phenomenal collateral support out there. And
thank you.
And kudos to you. I think this is an amazing film. Did you take a break after you'd finished filming this?
not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, but I'm hoping to.
I think
maybe
you deserve
in a new year.
One.
Thank you. I will be sure to tell my boss.
you do that. Certainly great discussion. And I want to thank Marilyn Mellows for being with us. She's the series producer of God in America. A lot of effort went into making this, a lot of people involved. Thank you, Marilyn, for being with us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Take care.
And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Mary Lamia. We're going to talk about Understanding Myself, A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings, with the holidays coming up. It would be nice to avoid some of the little temper tantrums we often have when families get together. So please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Don't forget, this is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we're switching gears. We're going from God in America to our little angels in America. We're going to talk about A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings in this next segment. We have a little shift in programming, as I told you at the beginning, and we were going to speak to Dr. Lamia next week, and we've switched things around because somebody was ill today. So Dr. Mary Lamia is a clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst who works with adults, adolescents, and preteens. She's a professor of the Wright Institute in Berkeley, California, and for nearly a decade, she hosted a weekly call-in talk show called Kid Talk with Dr. Mary on Radio Disney stations. Dr. Lamia blogs for Psychology today and has been sought in hundreds of television, radio, and print media interviews, as she's being sought today. Dr. Mary Lamia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicky.
And I should say you've written a book. It's called Understanding Myself, A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings. A lot of stuff out there for children. Why did you feel there was a need to write this? And what makes your book different from others out there on the shelves?
Well, my belief is that every kid and adult needs to understand and recognize and be able to manage their emotions. You know, emotional intelligence is linked to academic and social success in kids. But so often we ignore the emotions that children have unless they're in trouble. For example, if they express anger frequently or get themselves into some kinds of conflict or can't get out of a reaction to grief or do something that creates a lot of fear in themselves and others. But emotions aren't just for problem situations. Emotions are every day, practically every minute, every hour we experience an emotion, an emotion gets triggered, and knowing how to handle it is really important.
How do you define the difference between an emotion and a feeling? Because I think, especially with kids, sometimes it's hard for them to describe what they're feeling. What's the difference between emotion and feeling?
And with adults as well, Vicky, emotions are part of our biological makeup. Emotions are in your brain. Feelings are in your body. So based on a stimulus, let's say, the human brain has the ability to trigger an emotion, and that affects a person's sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system, which then creates the feelings in your body, and it also creates certain thoughts in your mind. So these thoughts and feelings that you have when an emotion is triggered go along with making decisions and taking action. And that's what emotions are all about. They provide you with information and they keep you alert, and they help you make decisions and take action. So, for example, when your brain triggers the emotion of anger, you think negatively, you feel irritable, you're on guard, and you're prepared to lash out. Or the emotion of anxiety makes you feel uneasy in your body. It also gives you energy. It makes you alert to the possibility that something bad might happen, so you have to be on guard. Anxiety is one of those emotions that's often misunderstood. Well, maybe they're all misunderstood in some ways.
Why particularly anxiety, though?
Well, a lot of time when people have anxiety, they want to make it go away. In fact, that's what bad habits are all about. So if you have a lot of anxiety because you have a deadline and you're sitting at your desk and you're trying to get something done, instead of using that anxiety as energy and focus to attend a task, and many effective people do, you might get up and feel hungry and go to the vending machine. Or you might feel compelled to, people who smoke, go and smoke a cigarette when they're anxious in order to calm down. And believe it or not, smoking a cigarette does make some people calm down. So So rather than think, well, I'm feeling rather anxious and that gives me a nervous energy that I could use to focus, they think they have to medicate it. And some people do medicate their anxiety with drugs or alcohol or food or sex, all kinds of activities.
Right, right. Where does mood play into this? Is mood a choice?
Moods are a little bit different than emotions. First of all, you know, moods aren't considered to be genuine emotions. They're just general feelings that kind of hang in there with you. Moods influence how you think about a situation or how you might respond to it. And a mood can affect how your appraisal system of your brain thinks about a certain event. If you see a person you really, really like, your bad mood could influence how you react to them, or seeing a person you really like could make your bad mood a good one, too.
Mm-hmm.
But moods are a little bit different, and moods can be hormonal, or they could be affected by various events. And moods are long-lasting. Emotions are triggered.
Okay, interesting. Do you think moods tend to run in families? Like, families can be moody. It's just a habit that they get into of being moody.
In a family, mm-hmm. certainly the emotional tone of a family could affect a child's mood or a person's mood. That's why I always tell parents to be sure to smile at their children. You know, emotions create certain facial expressions in us, and it's also true that facial expressions can cause you to feel a certain feeling. And we do have mirror neurons in our brain. So if somebody is smiling at us, like when you smile at a baby will smile back. It's mirror neurons,
right.
You know, are reflecting what you're doing, and it makes the same facial expression that you have. Well, if you smile at your children, one would think it would help their mood a bit because you might trigger some happiness in them. Or if a parent walks around depressed all day, certainly children pick up on that. Now, is there a tone in a family that can influence a child's mood? Absolutely.
I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you about how parents, you say they often collude in some of this behavior that we see with kids. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is Dr. Mary Lemire. She's a clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst who works with adults, adolescents, and preteens. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com, and if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Bringing you fresh perspectives every day. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We're in the last segment today of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We are live, but I'm recording, obviously, on phone. I'm dialing in, rather, obviously, by phone today. I couldn't get there because of the snow. So I hope all of you are safe and warm, as I said at the beginning of the hour. And my guest in this segment is Dr. Mary Lemire. She's a clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst and has written a really, really good book. It's called Understanding Myself, A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings. Now, this book really is written for kids, but also for teachers, right?
Well, actually, one of my reviewers wrote that every parent should buy a copy for themselves. And
yeah.
Yes, the book is written for kids, but I wanted parents and teachers and anyone who works with kids to read it because most adults don't understand their children's emotions.
Yes, I really like the fact that you've got psych notes in there, but this is written for, I mean, you had comments from 12-year-old girls that were saying this made such a difference to them as after they read it. I wanted to talk in this segment, we only have like 10 minutes left, but I wanted to talk about the holidays because this is always a difficult time for families. You know, I myself am heading home for the holidays, and this is the first time, I think, in 15 years that I would have spent the holidays with my family, and I actually told my mother last week, don't put too much expectation around this, because I think we build things up, and if they don't work out just perfectly, that's often when we can get, you know, into troubles stress-wise and people's emotions getting hurt. But you said during the break to me something that I thought was interesting, and I'd like to cover that with you. You said that the holidays are often a trigger for grief, not just for children, but for adults too. So I wonder if we can talk about that a little and how we should handle it.
Okay, but may I say that you just threw me a hook I couldn't resist, which is when we see our families, when adult children see their families and have not seen them for a while, oftentimes it throws us back into our childhood or adolescence, doesn't it? And that mm-hmm. often causes problems, because all of a sudden the same dynamics you had as a kid come right up. And so you prepare
yourself. And even if
yourself.
You don't have it with, you know, all of your family, most of my family I don't have that dynamic with. We come back as adults, but there are certain factors there that do come back as kids. and it's hard not to get drawn into it.
Absolutely. And speaking of things that come back, during the holidays, the biggest thing that happens for people in terms of emotion tend to be grief reactions. If you've lost somebody you really loved or were close to, holidays tend to bring up the emotion as though the incident occurred yesterday, as though the loss just occurred. And these are like anniversary reactions. It's the same reaction you get when a person's birthday happens or the day they died. And this is true for kids as well as adults. A holiday is about family, and our grief reactions tend to get triggered. And people often think that, well, there's this process to mourning that helps you work through your grief about loss. It's the stage theory idea. And people often feel guilty when they feel depressed over a loss, even though it happened long ago, as though they've not gotten over it. Or worked it through in some ways. And is it because they haven't gotten over it? Well, of course not. You never really and truly get over a loss. You know, you can't erase an emotional memory. It's sort of mute,
right.
But you're not going to get over it. So it's more about figuring out what to do when your emotional memories are triggered. And when you have that anniversary reaction, to just try to help yourself remember that person rather than trying to forget. I always think of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and his poem, Secret Anniversaries of the Heart, where he says, "The holiest of all holidays are those kept by ourselves in silence and apart, the secret anniversaries of the heart."
And it's That's so beautiful.
True. Yeah.
That is very beautiful. And you're right, those emotions suddenly can get triggered. I mean, I was driving along the freeway the other day, and it's 8 years since my father passed, and obviously I think about him, but not, you know, all day, every day. And all of a sudden I found I have this massive lump in my throat because I saw a guy in the car next to me was filling his pipe with tobacco, and my dad used to smoke a pipe.
Oh.
So when we get those reactions, and, you know, obviously if we're in a public place, we don't want to start boo-hooing everywhere. What are some of the things we can do to quell that a little?
Well, you just described the perfect example of an emotional trigger, and that triggered the grief reaction in you. What can we do? It's all about trying to remember instead of trying to forget, instead of trying to push it aside because it causes the reaction of grief. You know, grief informs you that you've lost something important to you. It gives you that information. So it's important to think about the person and what they gave you. So you see the man with the pipe and it chokes you up, and then you think to yourself, what is something very loving my father did for me? What is something I want to remember, rather than try to push it aside? And that's what people have to help their children do, to help their children remember rather than try to forget.
Good advice. We've heard an awful lot about bullying lately, and of course this can happen over the holidays too with siblings and cousins, and, you know, people
bullying
striving for attention. I was always told that bullies have low self-esteem. You say that's not necessarily true.
Right. People commonly believe that kids who behave like bullies do so because they have low self-esteem. In fact, parents often tell their children, don't worry about that bully. Bullies just have low self-esteem, so don't worry about him. But that's not true, and kids know that. Bullies are very, very confident. They're full of themselves, and they have high self-esteem. Except what the problem is with bullies is that they are highly shame-prone. And that's a different concept than having high or low self-esteem, because shame is an emotion you could hide from. And one of the ways a kid who behaves like a bully hides from his shame is to give it away to another kid. So what a bully will do to a child is make a child feel shame and make a child feel anxious so that the child cannot respond. You know, most of us, when we're bullied, become mute. And that's because bullies create high anxiety and high shame in us. And that's what a kid has to understand, which I tried to tell them in the book.
Yes. And you also talk about embarrassment as being one of the biggest fears that kids have. I know some adults still have that too, but I think when you're a kid, I mean, there are lots of times I can think about when I was 10 that I might have thought, oh, how embarrassing all the time. How do kids cope with embarrassment, and how do you tell them it's okay, we're human?
Well, you know, embarrassment is an emotion that signals to other people that you don't feel good about what you've done or who you are. It's sort of a little flash to others when we get embarrassed. And you know, the advice I give to kids, especially kids who blush, is just stand back and breathe and wait for a little while, and everybody's going to forget about the thing you're embarrassed about. Even though most of us, when we do something embarrassing, when we make an embarrassing mistake, we really believe that everybody is going to remember it forever. You got to laugh at yourself. You have to forgive yourself. And, you know, most people care about their own embarrassments. They're not going to care about yours.
Right. That's very true. Now, what about when we have little temper tantrums, or a child is angry, or they get into a fight? And I'm thinking, again, especially when you bring, you know, families together and there's so much expectation about this perfect scenario. How do we get to diffuse the situation? Oftentimes, I think people have good intentions but end up inflaming the situation.
Right. Anger is an emotion that is usually in response to frustration or threat or competition. And anger is often an emotion that gets triggered when a child or an adult feels something else. So number one is to figure out what's really making you angry. And it might not be an issue of anger. It might be an issue of shame, or it might be an issue of fear, or even grief. Anger is often used to cover up another emotion.
Okay. All right, so just pay attention and really read what's going on with the child. Okay, so we're almost at the end of our segment here, and I'd like to leave listeners with your final words. What do you want to say?
Teach your children about emotions. Emotional intelligence is the most wonderful gift you can give them.
And do you have a website?
I do. It's marylamia.com, LAMIA.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The
book, again, is called Understanding Myself, A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions and Strong Feelings. Great book for kids, for teachers, for parents. It really has a lot of really great information in there. Dr. Mary Lamia, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Vicki.
And I want to thank each of you for being with us today. Especially want to thank Eric for getting there so we could actually do a live show today. Appreciate you being there, Eric. And I hope everyone who's out there on the roads gets safely home. It's kind of hard to tell from
Amen
TV just how bad it is. Yes, really. I don't know if they're just driving around showing us the worst bits, but I went up the hill and I was like, the 16 was like a parking lot, and I turned around and came home. So everybody stay safe and warm, and get home as soon as you can. Thanks for being with us. And we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong, and you can find out more about us at conversationslive.net.
And everybody have a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, I forgot. Thanksgiving, of course. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Yes, happy Thanksgiving, everyone.